You'll find there, of course, the status sheet. Document number one is a committee meeting summary from the meeting on November 4th. Document two is an Amendment 6 timeline that Phil put together based on conversations with the National Marine Fisheries Service. Document three is PDT meeting summary. And document four is the presentation that Phil's going to give momentarily. There's been a little bit of activity since the last council meeting. On October 26th, NMFS published the final rule for Framework 7. The PDT met on October 21st to develop a problem statement that was to be used for a basis in developing goals and objectives for Amendment 6. On November 4th, the Monkfish Committee used the outcome of that meeting to develop a goal and objective statement for Amendment 6. Before Phil starts his presentation, in which he'll summarize those last two items, we'll follow that up with a committee motion for the council to approve the goals and objectives. And we'll also resume consideration of the motion that was postponed at the September meeting. So with the chair's consent, I'll pass the discussion off to Phil.
Thank you. This report the summary, the summarization of the work that the committee and the advisors and the plan development team have done on Amendment 6 to this point. The councils last year identified Amendment 6 as the vehicle for exploring catch shares management in the monkfish fishery, and some of this background information is for the benefit of people in the audience who may not be familiar with this as everyone else is. The Oversight Committee, in the course of this amendment development, had tasked the plan development team to develop a problem statement that incorporated the list of issues and problems with the fishery that had been compiled by the advisors and the Oversight Committee over the course of the past year, including consideration of scoping comments received earlier at the beginning of the year. And then these goals and objectives would be the basis. I mean, the problem state would be the basis for setting the goals and objectives. So the plan development team has done what it can to analyze the issues. Not every issue is conducive to the types of analysis that the plan development team does. But in any case, we did discuss all the issues, and that has culminated in this report. Just to give you our bottom line on top, the plan development team does not find that any major fishery-wide issues exist that would necessitate immediate action or wholesale changes to the fishery management plan. All of the issues that have been identified to date could be addressed through revisions to existing management measures under the current regime. There doesn't seem to be any issue that conflicts with the legal requirements of the Magnuson-Stevens Act or the stated goals of the FMP. However, the PDT also stated that this situation does not preclude the councils from considering more substantive changes to the management program, including catch shares, to address issues and concerns or to achieve other management objectives. This is the list of issues. You've seen it all at previous council meetings. I'm not going to read through them. I'll give you a moment to look them over. These were developed by the advisory panel and the oversight committee over the course of this summer. And I might add that this is the extent of what the committee and the advisory panel initially put out. And then we were tasked with trying to flesh these out and develop them and analyze them, describe the extent, and so on. So I'm going to go through each of the items in the bullet list and provide you with either the conclusions of the plan development team based on some sort of analysis or based on just our conversations on the subject. For the issue of latent effort, the PDT actually did have some substantive analysis. We looked at effort patterns for 2007 to 2010, and we defined latent effort as allocated but unused days at sea. That seemed to be the most objective way to characterize effort. The current method of allocating days at sea is based on days at sea used by active vessels. Every time we go through the specifications process, we look at active days at sea. And then the appropriate number of days at sea to achieve the catch target is actually allocated to all of the vessels. Now, what that does is it creates a potential problem for because vessels are allocated days at sea, and if they all started using them, there's a risk that catch would exceed the targets in the short term. However, since we look at active days at sea when we set the specifications, or if there's a problem, we can do it prior to this regularly scheduled specifications process, we would consider the active days at sea in establishing the next allocation. What we found is that there is a fairly consistent days at sea usage rate over the period that we analyzed, even though in 2010 the multi-species fishery adopted sector management. And potentially there could have been a big change in days at sea usage patterns. What we found, however, that latent effort was not activated, and nor did days at sea usage rates decline as a result of sector activity. We looked at the types of unused days at sea to determine the likelihood of them being activated, and we determined that about half of the allocated days at sea have a very low probability of being used. And the reasons for this are that scallop vessels, which are allocated monkfish days at sea, don't use their monkfish days at all because they are required to use a scallop day if they're on a monkfish day, and those scallop days are much more valuable as scallop days. Some vessels are allocated days at sea, but they have no landings of any species, and they're essentially inactive, or they've gone to Alaska, or they're doing something else, but they're not landing fish of any type, and it's unlikely that they're going to all of a sudden start using their monkfish days at sea. And the third category of low probability days at sea, and it's not a very large amount, is the vessels that fish in the southern area. All vessels that have a monkfish permit are allocated the same number of days at sea. But in the last 10 years or so, the southern area vessels have been allowed to use only a portion of those, and it's varied from year to year, as low as 12 days at sea and up 23, 28, whatever. But so there's a body of days at sea that they're allocated, but they could only use them if they were to use them in the northern area. And some vessels don't go to the northern area. So that creates a pool of northern area days at sea, essentially, that are unlikely to be used because the vessels don't go fishing in the northern area. So that's the first half of the allocated effort, which we consider having a low probability. The other part, the remaining half, 19% of the total, is allocated to vessels that fish for other species. They are active in some fisheries, but haven't used a monkfish day at sea at all. The remaining 31% is allocated to vessels that did use at least one monkfish day, but when you take all those active monkfish vessels, they're still only using about half of their allocated days at sea as a group. In the southern area, it seems that more vessels are using more of their allocation, but as a group, about half of the allocated days at sea are not being used by vessels that use at least one monkfish day at sea. And those are likely to be the most, those That effort is the most likely to be activated if there were to be a shift, because the vessels are already using monkfish days. And this is just a graphic representation of those. The southwest half of that pie chart, the three categories in there, are the low probability vessels. The scallopers are in the bottom section. The one to the left of that is the vessels that have no landings of any species, and then that smaller wedge is the northern area days at sea that are not used by vessels that fish exclusively in the southern area. And then the orange one at the top is the days at sea allocated to vessels that do land some species of fish but don't use any monkfish days at sea. And the two on the right are the days at sea allocated to vessels that use at least one monkfish day at sea, and that shows that half of them are using days, and half of those days go unused. The next issue on the list is the processor supply issue. And to address this one, the plan development team member conducted a survey interview of 10 individuals representing 8 companies that process or deal in large and small quantities of monkfish and seem to be essentially all of the people that are in the monkfish buying and processing business. I encourage you to read these reports, by the way. I'm just giving summary reports here in my presentation, but there's more detail on some of these in the documents provided attached to the meeting summary. Bottom line is that the processors want more fish. They want to see full utilization of the total allowable landings, and they also want science to improve so that the total allowable landings, the catch target, can get closer and closer to the limit and reduce the need to be overly precautionary. The PDT concluded, based on what we've been able to glean from data and discussions with people, is that the availability of fish is mostly but not entirely attributable to the overall catch targets and the seasonal distribution or availability of fish, and not the trip limits and days at sea, because we're seeing that not all the days at sea are being used. It's not constraining, and in most cases the trip limits are not constraining on vessels. The processors also commented that Brazil and China have developed monkfish fisheries, which is placing downward pressure on global prices and takes away market share. And the processors would like to have more fish over a longer period of time so they can essentially maintain their market position. There are competing forces, however, as there always are in a marketplace. The people who are selling the monkfish, that is the fishermen, have commented that many of them prefer smaller amounts over a longer period of time to maximize their price. And the buyers on the other side of the transaction would like to have larger amounts because they can get it at a lower price. And they can also achieve processing efficiencies. They can fill a container and ship it without having to store the fish until they get enough to send over. But they also would like landings throughout the year so they could hold market share and retain employees. So they would like more fish overall, and they'd like to maintain it throughout the course of the year, but they'd like to be able to buy it in larger quantities and get a better price. The next item is called wasteful discards. The issue is identified as wasteful discards. And what we did here was we looked at some general data and concluded that the stock, based on stuff coming out of the stock assessment, information coming out of the stock assessment, discard rates vary depending on the gear, the area, and time of year, in the range of 10 to 20%. The reasons for the discards is also variable. And we gather this information from the reasons that the captains give to the observers when discards occur. That's one of the information items that the observers collect. And what we found is that most of the trawl discards are due to minimum size. And some vessels fishing in the northern area also report discards over the incidental limit when the catch does not warrant using a day at sea. In other words, if their trip limit on a day at sea is 1,250 pounds of tails, and their trip limit when their incidental limit is 300 pounds of tails, if they're catching 4 or 5 or 600 pounds, they may discard that amount rather than consume a day at sea and reserve the day at sea for a time when they will have an amount closer to the directed trip limit. And so that is a source potentially of discards for vessels fishing in the northern area. It doesn't seem to be the case in the southern area. There were some discards that occurred in the southern area on account of the trip limit in the gillnet fishery. But most of those discards are due to product quality. At least that's the reason they have given to the observer. Sometimes the product quality issue is a result of the trip limit, however, because when people were hauling their nets, when they hit the limit, they would leave the gear in the water with fish in them and come back later to get them, and that often resulted in a product quality issue. And I think with Amendment 5, which just took effect this year, a provision to allow vessels to land a trip limit overage, we may have resolved some of that. I haven't heard much back from fishermen either way on this one. In any case, the fall run is really just beginning, so we might hear about that later. We've also found that in the northern area, gillnet discards are attributed to the minimum fish size, and that's perhaps when they're ground fishing because of the different mess sizes. For the scallop dredge fishery, the discard reasons overwhelmingly is unknown. That's the classification it's given. There are some attributed to the minimum size because, as you know, the dredge rings are not as size selective for monkfish. I was talking with someone yesterday, and essentially a lot of the reasons this unknown is that because people don't want to risk fishery violation and risk losing having the catch seize of scallops, because those are linked, they get rid of them, don't even bother with them. Or they just don't want to take the time to deal with them. If it's an open area trip, they're busy cutting fish, they want to get back in, cutting scallops, and they want to get back in, and so they just don't deal with the fish. The next issue on the list is inefficient vessel operations. Now, this is one that we didn't actually have the ability to go and do detailed analysis on. What we did have learned, though, is there are different views on operational efficiency depending on the type of operation you have, the scale of the business, and your cost structure. We found that multiple vessel owners see efficiency gains in consolidating their operations. Even if you're talking about days at sea, if they have 3 vessels and they can put all the days on one, then they only have to pay one set of dockage and insurance costs and all those things, and they would get efficiency gains out of that type of consolidation. Larger vessel operations, those operators have commented that they can't always cover the trip costs under restrictive trip limits. This is especially the case with the offshore fishery in southern New England. Even though we've provided for a multiple trip limit thing, it's still not worth it to go out there and trawl through the deep water. In the northern area, the vessels, to achieve efficiencies, they tow for a long time in the deep mud, and the cost of fuel and everything. If you have restrictive trip limits, it doesn't cover the costs. Smaller vessel operators, on the other hand, see efficiencies in extending the fishing season and obtaining the higher prices per pound. In other words, and we've received these comments countless times at various hearings, keep the trip limit lower and give us more days if we have a choice, because we can extend the season over a longer period of time. And this is southern area fishery predominantly, where they say, where it's gill nets, with a lower trip limit, we purchase less gear, so we get efficiencies there. And also, we have a steady and predictable business planning horizon. So if we keep things steady for 3 years, we can buy the gear and plan what we need for the next 2-3 years. That's where they realize their efficiencies. The next issue is lack of flexibility, another item that is difficult to analyze quantitatively. But the PDT's kind of determined that, based on discussions with a lot of people, that flexibility is related to other issues on the list and stems from regulatory controls that constrain flexibility, either within the monkfish fishery, the monkfish rules, or regulatory controls in other fisheries. Or other regulatory controls, such as protected species rules. Many of the flexibility issues relate to the interaction between the Northeast multi-species and the monkfish fishery, specifically the days at sea usage requirement, where you have vessels that have to burn a groundfish day, and if they're in a sector, they don't even need the groundfish days except to be able to use monkfish day at sea. And most of this issue is focused in the north, although there are some vessels in the southern area that are in a similar situation. Some of these issues are specific to sector vessels, multiple port landings, for example. A sector vessel can come in and land in several ports, and that's their choice when they're operating just as a groundfish boat in a groundfish sector. But if they're on a monkfish day, then every time they come to port, they have to stop the day at the sea clock, take out, and if they want to go to another port to take out the rest of their landings at a different place, they have to start another day at sea trip and make the transit and then stop the clock again. So it becomes a burdensome situation. However, the plan development seems felt that many of these flexibility issues could be addressed through adjustments to the current management plan. The next item was the issue of the restrictions on the Category H permits, which Category H permits were qualified late after the FMP had already been established, and they're currently restricted to fishing just in the Virginia, North Carolina area. There are 7 permits that are allocated in this category, but only 6 of them are active. And they are, in addition to being constrained by the 3840 line from the monkfish point of view, they have the turtle closures that move up the coast in the spring, and harbor porpoise restrictions, as well as the state waters restriction. So they're really constrained. In addition to that, the availability of monkfish is very seasonal there. The fish come out of the deep water and pass through. And so their season is limited to about 3 months in the spring. And these boats use about half of their allocated days at sea. Now, I made a mistake here, I think. I know that the advisory panel recommended that folding this into Category B, and I thought I had recalled that the committee agreed to doing that, but I couldn't find anything in the record, and I listened to the committee meeting summary again to make sure. So I think it was just something that people acknowledged, and they would deal with it when either we do Amendment 6 or whatever next action. So that's the Category H. The next issue that was identified by the committee is the full utilization of catch targets. The plan development team looked at catch and effort data and concluded that the regulations themselves do not cause the shortfall, particularly in the southern area, where they are actually approaching catching their catch target. Other factors may include fuel costs, the availability of fish, or decisions by operators to participate in other fisheries and not target monkfish. And measures to reduce discards could contribute to achieving full utilization. Keep in mind now we're managing for total catch, not necessarily landing. So if you throw the discards in there, we're actually getting closer to our catch target, but we want to convert those discards as much as possible into landings. The next issue is protected species interaction, and the plant development team's discussion focused on the impending endangered species decision with regards to Atlantic sturgeon, which will likely require the councils to take some actions to adopt the measures to reduce the mortality of Atlantic sturgeon, and this could be done through the next available action, but I think timing is an issue, and we still don't know what the outcome of that is. In addition to that, there's the harbor porpoise closures that are the consequence closures that are potentially going to take effect depending on the success of the industry's response to the initial warnings and you know, change the batteries in their pingers or whatever it's required to reduce the interaction with harbor porpoise. But in any case, there may be some things that take place prior to that need to take place prior to the timeline that we've discussed for Amendment 6. Another issue is the coordination of management regimes within geographical areas, and the PDT basically acknowledged that there are issues with overlapping regulations, especially with the multi-species FMP, but didn't really have much information to describe or document the extent of these issues and their impact on the monkfish fishery. But we do recognize that, you know, there are some issues people are having. So in terms of potential solutions, these could be addressed by specific and discrete changes to the current management program or by alternative management approaches such as catch shares. And the choice of management systems depends on the council's policy objectives and their goals, including social, economic, ecological, or administrative objectives, consistent with the national standards. So the committee considered this report that I delivered to them up to this point, and they have adopted a set of goals and objectives, which they're bringing to your attention today for consideration and approval. I've placed the goal up here for you to look at, but I encourage you to go to page 4 of the meeting summary to look at the full set of goals and objectives identified by the committee. The main goal here is to maximize yield and efficiency and simplify regulations in the monkfish fishery while minimizing any resulting disruption in relative fleet distribution and composition, preserving monkfish bycatch allowances necessary to prosecute other fisheries, and minimizing impacts on protected species. And the goals of this amendment would supplement the original goals of the FMP. So what's next? You consider the goals and objectives, and if you approve them, the committee will begin to identify the range of alternatives that will achieve those goals. And as Mark pointed out, there is a separate memo discussing potential timeline based on my conversations with NIMS and General Counsel, and you can review that. That's it.
Questions for Felon's presentation? I go to the audience. John?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is John Whiteside. I'm an attorney with Mickelson Barnett, and I represent the Sustainable Fisheries Association processors in Massachusetts, in New Bedford and Gloucester. And we're here today to urge the council to immediately double the trip limit, incidental trip limit on monkfish in the northern area in particular, across all permit categories. We believe that that would be an opportunity for the fishery to approach the TAC, which it has only hit once in the past 10 years, based on my reading of things, and would allow us to achieve optimum yield. At this point, we're down in the 50% range, and we think that is something that does not show a success in the fishery, and that doubling the incidental trip limit would allow for that. There were comments that were made at the recent Oversight Committee meeting down in Philadelphia, where there were fishermen who were discussing about how they're out on a trip, they've landed 600 pounds, they have a 400-pound limit, they're tossing 200 over. That's just a complete waste. If we doubled the incidental trip limit, we'd be able to land those discards, and they wouldn't have to burn a day at sea. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Harriet?
Harriet Dietrichson, boat owner from New Bedford. I do not want to see it go to sectors, which I see you saying here, which are quotas, and doing it without a referendum. I do not want to see that people are going to have to requalify. We qualified in Amendment 1. If people have to requalify for monkfish, that would basically be you're talking about use it or lose it. You're talking about a reallocation of the monkfish fishery. I hear what the gentleman just said. I have no problem with that, if that can be done with the science. But I was at the hearing in New Bedford. I did not hear anybody wanting sectors or catch shares or whatever. If it is, it's quotas, you got to go to the referendums. I don't want to see just people be put out of the fishery that are making a living in the fishery. That's my main point. I heard in Riverhead there were people who were happy with what they had. Some of them said they were afraid of new rules because every time there's new rules, they seem to get less and they're hurt. I think we want to accommodate as many people as we can that are now making a living monk fishing. I see what you talk about, Leighton. I just heard it explained. Some people who are not using their days at sea that they have in monkfish, but that allocation is being redistributed to other people who are now fishing on an all-over fishery basis. So everybody is benefiting from that. You put in a system of the buying and selling like you've put in multi-species, you already see the result. There's no question people are being put out of the industry. They're here testifying yesterday right in front of you saying they're losing boats, they're being forced out of business. I don't want to see that in more fisheries. I don't want to see monkfish is not overfished. Overfishing isn't occurring. I hear you don't have money for the different committees, PDTs, whatever you need. Why wouldn't you put the effort of the people who are council members and advisors who are working, put their efforts into other things that are needed, other species where maybe more where attention is needed. I don't want to see a rush here just to take from some to give others more, like has happened in my estimation in multi-species. Some people are happy with their one boat. I hear what you're saying. If people have three boats, it would be more advantageous. Well, it probably would. But you've got to look at the social economics of it. There's a person with one boat. They're making a living. They're happy. You're going to force them out because someone else says it's more convenient for them. Are we going to put out of business people who are making a living for themselves and their families, helping the community, because it's more convenient for somebody else that they're put out of business? That's what I think you've already done with multi-species. You see the results. I'm against anything like that. I do have a permit. And with the scallops, of course, they get 300 pounds a day when they're in access areas. that only counts when you come in the area. It doesn't count the traveling time to the area, so it's a 300 pounds when you're in the area. I do agree to get rid of discards in any way you can. I think this seems to be good. I think Amendment 5 seemed to do things for some fishermen. They got more fish, the scallop has stayed as they were. I feel there must be something underlying here why you're even doing this. There's no overfishing. Overfishing isn't occurring. The men seemed happy. In Riverhead, there was one who came from Gloucester to warn them. You do not want sectors, he said. That you don't want. I heard that man speak at the full council, your last council meeting, and he asked for ITQs, which, of course, are going to require a referendum. I don't want to see that hidden again through the word sector, which I guess you can call that anything, and it's satisfactory. I want to see people be able to make a living, as many as can. I do not want to see them. Rules come in that hurt the person who owns one boat. My father owned one boat. He supported his family. We didn't feel we needed for anything. We were middle income people. I don't like the mentality here. I don't want to see it to go further. It's already bad enough. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Phil, for the presentation. Before we get into the discussion of the goals and objectives, I just do want to point out a couple of things about the timeline. If you look at the table on page 3 of document 2, Phil kind of laid out the timeline for the Amendment 6. You can see that it is a complex fishery. It extends, of course, from North Carolina to Maine. The management process and decision-making involves two councils. There are two management areas for which we may ultimately have two sets of alternatives, and which a significant portion of the fishery fishes in both of those areas, further complicating that. And there's also a significant bycatch component, or significant incidental catch component, so that the monkfish fishery is intertwined with other fishery management plans. So we're estimating that the timeline for this would be 2.5 to 4 years, and if the plan involves some sort of LAP, which would require a referendum, that would extend that timeline to 4 to 5 years. In addition to that, there's some more complicating factors. If we have to address the sturgeon issues in a separate action, that would delay the development of Amendment 6. And during the, if based on the referendum we had to modify the plan and subsequently the DEIS, that could extend it a little bit as well. So, is there any questions about that? Okay, then. I'd just like to draw your attention to, again, document 1, page 4, which lists the goals and objectives that were developed by the committee. I won't bother reading them all unless the chair requests that I do. Basically, each sub-goal reflects elements within the main goal, and then under the sub-goals are objectives to address those sub-goals. I think maybe before we present the motion, have some discussion.
Any questions of Mark? Dr. Pierce.
Here, Mark, on page 2, with the listing of the suggested sub-goals and objectives, just a question regarding objective number 8. Objective number 7. Implement measures to consolidate the Category H permits with Category B permits. Just a clarification for me. If that is done, that will increase profitability in the fishery. So it is related specifically to the sub-goal 2.
Well, what you're referring to is the straw man document, and that's not what we ended up with. The final goals and objectives are on page 4.
Okay.
And that element there is actually now Objective 7, which is to address existing geographic constraints on permit categories, and that is under sub-goal 3, which is simplified regulations.
Dave Gatham.
Yeah. I'm like David. On the original goals there on page 2, you had under sub-goal 3, objective 8, it's quite specific. Implement accumulation limits if some sort of catch shares are implemented. And that's been taken out and replaced, as best as I can tell, with sub-goal 4, which is looks like a mom and apple pie type statement that to me doesn't say anything. When we get to voting on these goals and objectives, I'm going to make a motion to put that back in under sub-goal 4. I want accumulation limits done up front, not after the fact, if we're going to proceed this way.
Anyone else? Mark?
Well, if there's no more questions, we'll pose the motion.
I was perhaps waiting for somebody to explain to David why that was taken out. And the reason it was is that the committee spent a lot of time characterizing these as objectives, and they felt that accumulation limits itself is a measure. That may be the measure that you come up with to address that sub-goal. But they really wanted to not get explicit with measures in the objectives. They felt that would come as a second, as the next step is to identify the measures. So if the council approves these and the committee goes back to identify the range of alternatives to address each of these objectives or sub-goals, accumulation limits would be identified as one of the types of measures that would address that goal. And that's really why they pulled it out. That wasn't that people were objecting necessarily to having accumulation limits.
I understand that, Phil. I read the discussion, but I think, one of the problems all our amendments, in my opinion, have suffered from over the years is fuzzy goals and objectives. And I think you need specific goals and objectives that tell the public right up front, if you proceed this way, this is what's going to happen. And when you don't have those, then you can hide behind fuzzy objectives that are basically unmeasurable. So you can say, I read this and it says, minimize disruption to current fleet distribution and composition and fishing community structure while allowing the fishery to evolve. Well, basically that's a way of saying, well, the fishery evolved, your community got thrown out. Oh, well, sorry. And I want it stated right up front, clearly measurable goals and objectives that people will know right up front if we proceed with this amendment, this is what's going to happen. We didn't do that in Amendment 16. We didn't do accumulation limits, and we're paying a terrible price for it right now. So, as I said, I kind of respectfully disagree with the committee on this, and we'll see how this goes.
I'm not quite sure how you want to proceed, Mr. Chair, whether we want to get into an editing session on the goals and objectives before we propose a motion, or should we propose a motion and see where it goes from there?
Put the motion up and so that we have a target to aim at.
So I move on the behalf of the committee that the council consider and approve the committee recommendation on goals and objectives for Amendment 6 as developed at the November 4th meeting.
Committee motion does not need a second. I am going to go first to the public and get their comments. Okay, Harriet, I see your hand.
There was one thing that I wanted to say last time at the microphone that I forgot. People who are in your sectors now, they're not on days at sea. So the only people who have to give a monkfish day at sea, one of their days at sea, a groundfish day at sea, would be those in the common pool. The other people, they don't have to give a day at sea, correct?
If you want to exceed the incidental limit for monkfish, then you have to burn a monkfish day at sea.
You have to burn
and
a monkfish day at sea, correct.
If you have a groundfish permit, you have to also burn a groundfish day at sea when you're burning a monkfish.
But they
day.
Don't have days at sea anymore in the
They do have them in the bank. They just don't
they
need
them
to go fishing.
So it wouldn't stop what they're doing with their quota system, correct? They'd still be able to fish the quotas they have. It doesn't, I want to understand that. It doesn't affect them in that way, like it would somebody in the common pool who's fishing right now multi-species on days at sea. Am I correct or am I wrong on that? Pardon?
Yes, in this case, you're wrong. If you exceed the incidental limit, you have to register. You have to put in the VMS, common pool or sector vessel when on a day at sea. And then if you exceed the limit for that, you have to have, you check off in the northern area, you can convert it to a monkfish day. But you have to burn a day at sea. Now, the days at sea aren't counted differentially the way they are in the common pool. In other words, there's differential counting now in different areas in the common pool. We're only counted at 1-to-1. But if you intend to keep over the, I think it's 300 pounds, 25% or 300 pounds on board, you have to register for a day at sea, a groundfish day at sea, and then if you exceed, what is it, 465 or something, you have to register for monkfish.
So what would that take away from the allocation you have for groundfish?
When you run out of days, you have to lease days just as you always did if you want.
Are you talking monkfish days now or groundfish days?
No, groundfish days.
If you're in a sector.
If you're in
a sector.
You're
still on days, you're telling me.
That's right. There's still a calculation of days in the back if you register as a common pool or sector vessel on a day at sea. If you register for not on a day at sea, then it doesn't count it. But then you're limited to having monkfish 25% of the fish on board or 300 pounds, whichever is less.
Phil?
Okay.
Yeah, briefly, this is a typical example of some of the issues that we talked about with the overlap of regulations and the complications and the flexibility issues. It's exactly what people were referring to, and it is confusing. It could be remedied by fixing the current plan requirements or by going in a different direction altogether.
Well, my suggestion would be to try to fix any inequities, but to throw it all away, next thing I feel, you come in here, you'll probably be in overfishing. And then the next thing is everybody who has incidental catches or whatever, it's going to be a problem for everybody with accountable measures. I think you're only making your problems worse. Thank you.
Anyone else? Mackenzie? Tina?
Tina Jackson, American Alliance of Fishermen. Regarding the PDT conclusions, I mean, you're not finding any major widespread issues. There's not a problem in there that can't be addressed by revising existing management. And Phil, can I just ask a quick question? The legal conflicts, is that with the current FMP or a proposed catch share FMP, a proposed catch share plan?
I'm sorry, could you, the legal, what?
It said there was no legal conflict in the conclusion. Is that regarding the current FMP or
what
proposed?
That's referring to is that the current plan, the way it's operating, does not conflict with the Magnuson-Stevens Act or the goals and the objectives of the FMP.
Okay, thank you. So let's go back to the public meetings that we had regarding proposal of Monkfish Catchier plans. The vast majority of people, New Bedford, I was in the New Bedford meeting and I was in the Warwick meeting, nobody wants this program. Nobody wants this plan of Catchiers. Nobody wants it. And Harriet had attended the Riverside one again. There was one person, I think, who attended two different meetings that particular day, and that was the only person really to speak out for Catchiers. And that one person is you know, it's amazing that that one person is now sitting on the advisory panel as a Gilmetter promoting that the fleet wants this. So, you know, I'd also like to point out that Betty and Grant Moore Foundation gave a whole hell of a lot of money to GMRI to create and implement Catchiers on Monkfish a year prior to this council ever putting up a proposal on Monkfish Catchiers. I mean, who are these people to dictate to the council and to industry as to how we're going to manage our stocks, specific to Monkfish? And also, I'd like to point out that in D.C., funding for Catchiers is more than likely and it's highly probable that it will go through. So why is this council wasting time and money on a management plan that's going to be illegal to implement for at least another year? So just for the record, that's the feeling of a lot of people that I've spoken to, and obviously that's my feeling. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Dr. Pierce, then Doug Grau.
Yeah, relative to the issue of Catchiers, if we adopt this this motion with the goals and objectives as described on page 4 of the document committee report, does that mean that we have decided to implement a catch-year program for Monkfish? I say that because it appears to be sub-goal number 4 and part of the overall goal regarding minimizing any resulting disruption in relative fleet distribution and composition. So it's a very important initiative that we would undertake, catch-year management in the Monkfish fishery, and it's somewhat disguised in the list of sub-goals. If we're going to do that, if that's what the committee is suggesting we do, then let's be very specific about it, state it up front and not mask it somewhat by the way in which it is worded in the goal and sub-goal statement. I come to that conclusion that sub-goal 4 relates to catch-year management because of the text on page 3 regarding references to accumulation limits and the like. So I just need to get that clarification from the committee. You know, where is it going with this? What is it actually recommending to us? Because if that is the intent, then let's understand that from the get-go, since this motion, if adopted, I think, has us go in that direction.
I would ask either Mark or Phil, if you wanted to answer that question, or
first I'll defer to Mark, and then if he doesn't,
I'll take a shot at that. The goals and objectives are to address the issues in the fishery, and catch shares we expect will certainly factor into the range of alternatives that are used to address those issues. Anticipating that catch shares, because of that, that's why sub-goal 4 is there, although disruption of the current fleet distribution and composition could occur by other processes besides catch shares.
Doug Grau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a motion to amend that we insert an objective under sub-goal 4 that would read, implement measures that would result in accumulation limits if some sort of catch shares are implemented.
That needs some wordsmithing. I look at that and I'm not sure I would results in accumulation limits in some sort of catch shares, or would that, is that better if catch shares are adopted or implemented, or
after accumulation limits it said if some sort of catch shares. Are implemented. I'm sorry, my enunciation is not that great this morning.
Just trying to make it clear. Is there a second? Dave Gaethel. Discussion.
Just a rationale. I agree with Mr. Gaethel that I think this needs to be put in as an objective under, and made it clear that this would be one of the objectives that would be addressed. And I think the way I reworded it from the original straw man version of this makes it consistent with the other objectives wording in the under the other goals, sub-goals.
Perry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, although I agree with the accumulation limits ought to be part of this whole process. It's a measure, not an objective. And so I'm having trouble with that, with this amendment language here. I don't know how to incorporate it into the goals and objectives. I mean, the committee's compiled a very comprehensive list of goals and objectives to address a very complex fishery. The 4 to 5 year timeline for development and implementation seems reasonable, particularly given the you know, it's likely two protected resource issues that we're going to be dealing with over the next couple of years. We can't predict how this fishery is going to look in 4 or 5 years. Lessons learned from Amendment 16 would mean that we would front-load accumulation limits into a catch-share program, but I'm not comfortable with calling accumulation limit an objective.
Okay, I've got, let's see, Dr. Pierce, then Glenn, then Mark, then Dave Preble.
Yeah, I support the suggested change to the motion that Doug is making. I understand where Terry's coming from, but then again, when I look at the language for all of the objectives, or almost all the objectives, it says, implement measures two. So if this is consistent with that phrasing, with that approach, implementing measures that would result in accumulation limits if some sort of catch shares are implemented, if indeed this is going to be a sub-goal within the list that clearly indicates there will be consideration of catch share management, then we may as well tell everyone from the get-go and make sure we all understand that if indeed we go in that direction, we will address consolidation issues, we will address excessive share issues, and that would come about by this particular language as suggested by Doug. So I feel it's an appropriate way for us to move forward to clearly indicate what a catch share management initiative would entail, that is, addressing consolidation issues.
Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. A question for Doug. This is implement measures that would result in accumulation limits if some sort of catch shares are implemented. Does this mean in the initial allocation or after that has taken place?
That would be up to the committee as they develop this. I think it would probably be better to do it up front, at least based on some other catch share development programs. They've developed the catch share, the accumulation limits ahead of time. So, but that's up to the committee and to the rest of the council.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm opposed to the motion. As I read the original motion, I didn't see the word cat share, ITQ, IFQ, anything like that in there. I think that was done purposefully so that we would not be driven or forced towards a cat share program, nor have it precluded a priority. I think now to try to attach a condition to a alternative that may not come to the fore up front is an improper way to go. Witness where we are with struggling with accumulation limits in Amendment 18 and prioritizing them or not prioritizing them, working on them, not working on them. To slip them in here in this, in Amendment 6, goals and objectives at this point, I don't think is wise. Thank you.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Frankly, I'm confused by this whole discussion. If you look at Subgoal 3 says minimize changes to current fleet distribution and composition and fishing community structure. Under Objective 8, it says implement accumulation limits if some sort of cat shares are implemented. It's already in there. Subgoal 3, page 2. Oh, okay. That's why I was confused. I was looking at the wrong page.
Anyone else? Dave?
I support this motion. I think you have to be upfront with people. You have to tell them what you're going to do if you're going to do something. You know, the reason I think people don't, you know, are struggling with putting this in is that they don't want to tell people up front that as part of this amendment, you know, we're going to examine this. This time we're going to do it in advance. We're going to try to do it right this time. And quite frankly, I can't even vote to go ahead unless this is in there. You know, I'll vote to not to even go ahead because we have to let people know up front what's going to happen. And that's, you know, that's what we didn't do in Amendment 16. And we're still struggling with it several years later.
Anyone else in the council? Call the question on a motion to amend. All.
Just to be clear, is this adding to the current sub-goal or replacing it? It's.
That's adding.
It's adding language to the
adding
current
to that sub-goal. That would be incorporated in the overall motion.
Actually, excuse me. It's to insert an objective under sub-goal. So the language of sub-goal 4 will remain the same, and we'll add an objective number 8 under sub-goal 4 and then change the numbering of 8 and 9, is my understanding.
Yeah, essentially that's what you were saying. This is adding language, not substituting for the existing one. Everybody clear on that? Call the question. All those in favor so indicate. Nine in favor. Opposed? Seven opposed. Abstention? Nine to seven. The motion carries. Yes, Gene.
Just wanted to relay something I said at the committee meeting, which is if the council is serious about accumulation limits, then they have to, I think, consider a control date as we did for groundfish at some point. If you're going to implement this kind of a measure.
So
I don't think it's on the agenda for today, right?
What's that?
It's not on the agenda for today. I think it just needs to be considered as to whether.
So it would be something that that the committee would have to bring back to the council at a subsequent meeting, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
The committee, I think, may have heard that.
I did bring it up at the last committee meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're on to the main motion as amended. Further discussion? call the question. All those in favor, so indicate. Fifteen in favor. Opposed? One opposed. Abstention? 15-1-0. The motion carries. Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The remaining item I have is the motion that was postponed from the September meeting. Karen, if you could put that up. As you recall, that was a motion that the committee made to request that the council send a letter to NIMS requesting that they calculate individual contribution factors, PSCs, ITQs, or other, based on landings history for three time periods for each area: initial permit qualification period, 2000 to 2010, and 2005 to 2010, to be sent to permit holders and to identify the proportion of landings by management area used in the calculations for each vessel, and that the agency also provide a summary report to the council. The committee did not discuss or come to any resolution on this, nor were they asked to, actually. So
you're not putting that forward as a motion at this time?
It's out there from the last meeting. It's up to the committee, where the, up to the council, you know, whether they want to proceed with that.
Yeah, it was, as I'm reading, was postponed. I know that the service had some concerns about that. I don't know if they want to reiterate those, and or whether they would, if no action is taken on this per se, that they don't make any comments on it. I'm when it is postponed, Gene, is that the same as tabling it? That, I mean, does somebody need to make a motion to bring it back?
I think, yeah, for the next meeting, was it postponed for a time certain to the next meeting? I think that's what it was.
Yeah, I have the wording here. It was
so it's
postponed the motion until the November meeting.
Yeah, so I think it's okay to bring it up as you have. So it's now a motion on the table.
Okay, so that would be, was that a committee motion originally?
That was originally a committee motion, yes.
Okay, so no second is needed, or should we have a second on that just to be clear?
Maybe to be safe, okay. Have a second.
I'm going to ask for a second on that motion. Terry Stockwell. Okay, I'm going to go to the public for comment. Maggie.
Thank you. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I understand and support the intent of the committee motion, but have concern with the specific potential qualification periods that were chosen. Since the committee first discussed that, I've had a number of calls from fishermen who wanted to see a qualification period that was consistent with the qualification period for groundfish. And this was important in particular to some gillnet fishermen who, during the groundfish qualification time frame, targeted monkfish and therefore felt that their groundfish allocation was impacted by that. And you may recall that there was a time during the groundfish that gillnetters could have extra days at sea if they used a larger mesh. So those fishermen chose to use a 10-inch gillnet, which would really only catch monkfish and got the extra days at sea. So they built up some history of fishing on monkfish during that time frame, and then when there were allocated groundfish, they felt that they didn't get, you know, a realistic groundfish allocation because they had targeted monkfish. So they were hoping to see this, you know, same qualification period that was chosen for groundfish. So again, I understand why the committee wants to have this sent out. I think another way to possibly accomplish this would be for the service to provide monkfish permit holders with their entire catch history and they may be able to then look through that and sort it and see, you know, which years they have a higher catch level than others. Thank you.
Anyone else? Ted.
Ted Platts, Newport, Rhode Island. I'll just echo Maggie's sentiments. I think you might do well to get rid of those time periods. I personally don't like 2005 to 2010. We started making sacrifices to rebuild the stock, and back in 2000, a certain number of people entered the fishery after it was rebuilt in 2008. I would think deference would go to the people that made the sacrifices to rebuild the stock. If you're going to put together the PSC, why not just put it together for every year, and then we can talk about qualifying periods later. I think you just unnecessarily politicize it by banding it into segments. If you give everyone their PSC for each individual year, and we'll talk about allocation years later if we go down that road.
Thank you. Harry?
Dietrichson, I personally have no problem with making anything public of people who are fishing and with their permits, because this is a public resource. And so if you look at Wall Street, when they trade, they know what's being traded, how much is being paid for, and everything else. So this is public. You're got it in trust, but this is a public resource. So I have no problem with any of that. I don't even see where, when you talk sometime about confidentiality. But when you come with new time frames, it's what I just tried to say before. This is a reallocation of the monkfish fishery, and this is what one man said in Riverhead. He had a trip boat. He said it had not been really profitable for him to give one of his groundfish days to go down to the canyons and fish monkfish because the allocation was too small for a boat of his size. And he said, now you're looking to come up with new years, and you're going to disqualify me. So this is basically a limited access. You're really putting in here a limited access amendment. You're disqualifying some people. You're requalifying other people to take that place. That's what I see this as. It's a use it or lose it when you come with new years. Qualifying happened back in 99, Amendment 1. That's when they made it a limited access fishery. Now you're redoing that. That's what I see it as, a person who's been attending these meetings since 85. You're setting new years. You're going to get some out. You're going to get others in. This is a requalification of people. The same as you did in Amendment 1 when you put it into a limited access fishery. That's what results will be of what you're doing here. Just want it on the record. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. I had Tom Dempsey and then Terry and Mark.
I originally brought this concept up at the last council meeting because, for all the reasons that were stated by a number of the speakers, that we need more information and that the industry is needs to know their history. I understand the concerns of the service to do this at this time and the concerns about identifying qualifying periods when we've really just identified objectives. So with that in mind, and unless you have an objection, I'd like to put a motion to substitute. And Karen has the language. That motion would read that the council direct the Monkfish Committee to develop a range of alternatives to address the identified objectives for Amendment 6,
Recognizing the difference between the northern and southern monkfish fisheries, the council directs the committee to develop different measures for these areas. If I get a second, I'd like to provide some rationale for that.
Seconded by Terry Stockwell.
I think we've had a really good discussion over the last several committee meetings. The AP has had it a number of times to comment on this, and I think it's now that we get to work on developing these alternatives to improve the performance of the fishery. We've heard loud and clear from the southern and northern zones and fishermen that fish in those areas that they're different fisheries and they require management solutions tailored to those different areas. We do that already. I think it's only right that we continue to consider that and move forward in that direction. I agree with the intent of the previous motion, the main motion. We need that information, but I think we should charge the committee to craft exactly the request to the agency. So I think this is the jumping off point for today.
Terry Stockwell.
Actually, Tom beat me to it. My recollection of the committee motion postponement was specific until after we adopted the goals and objectives. And given Maggie's and Ted's comments, I think Tom's motion makes perfect sense.
I have Mark Alexander.
I appreciate that motion, and I agree with the first sentence of it and the first part of the second sentence, but and I fully agree that it may be very well that the range of alternatives for the north and the south will be different, but this is forcing us to make them different, and I don't necessarily think we want to be constrained by that. I would prefer that to address some of the issues. Some of the alternatives may be the same, but to address other issues, they may be different. But again, this motion basically confines us to coming up with different alternatives for each area.
Okay, excuse me. I'm going to go to Tom and then Dave.
Mark, recognizing that point, do you have friendly language or suggested language change, perhaps directs the committee to consider developing different measures for these areas?
I'll make a suggestion for you. Just take out different. You've already recognized the difference between northern and southern in the earlier part of the statement. And that way you don't force the committee into having to make different, That's a suggestion.
As long as Terry agrees, I'm comfortable with that.
Okay, I've got Dave Pierce and then Jim Odlin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think we're getting to the crux of this.
The problem.
The problem with the wording here is that it certainly implies that we will, in fact, develop cash shares in one of those two fisheries, because that's what the real big difference would be. And I don't think – I couldn't support, as Mark said, directing that outcome at this point. It may be the right way to go, and it may not. So I think your suggestion is apt.
Okay. So the motion is as it stands, recognizing the differences. So – All right. So the motion stands, the specific charge to the committee to deal with the north and the south. Okay. I had thought that we wouldn't need a motion like this because the next logical step for the Monkfish Committee would be to take the objectives that we adopt and then to develop the measures. But if they need a specific charge, that's okay. We can do that. I guess my question that I have is for the maker of the original motion, for Tom, relative to the request for data for catch history using the time periods that were selected. Would it be, if I may, Mr. Chairman, Tom, would it be your intent that eventually following this charge, the committee would actually come forward and repeat that motion that you had initially made. I'm just wondering where you're going with that, because it was a very, I know you were very, very much certain that that's the way in which you wanted to go, and now you really decided to take a different approach. So will we likely receive, the council likely receive a similar motion after the committee meets again?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm supportive of the need and recognize the need for the industry to have as much information as quickly as we can provide it to them as we develop alternatives so that they can inform or make informed comments with the full facts in front of them. I do think it's now time for the committee to perhaps consider that, consider a request, perhaps consider some of the comments that have been made from the audience about how to alter that request in such a way that the agency is more comfortable and the industry gets the information that that we need to start making this developing these alternatives. So I remain committed to going forward in that way. I think directing the committee to start off in this way will come back to the council with that sort of request, perhaps not identical but similar.
Jim Hobb.
Yeah, I was going to support, I will support this. I was going to support the previous motion, and I just want to respond that one of the things I see in general is that we're not specific enough when we charge our committees, and it's why we end up having taken so long to get anything done, that the specificity in the first motion would focus the committee much more than this will. So I just think as a general charge, looking forward, when we do things, send things to our committee, the more specific we are, the more likely we are to be moving forward instead of back and forth. So that's just a general statement. I'll support both of them. But I think the more specific we can be in our charges to committees in general will keep us moving forward instead of back and forth. Thank you.
I am going to go back to the audience. This is a substantive change. Any more public comment on this? Back to the council. Gene.
You just make a, at the risk of being overly procedural here. I mean, this is really not a proper substitution or amendment because it's totally different from the other amendment. This is a totally different concept that doesn't relate to the other motion that was on the table at all, I don't think. But, I mean, that one asked for the service to provide information about catch history. This is entirely different. Yeah, but you're not allowed to substitute a motion with a totally ungermane substitute that's not related to the original motion. I want to read it for you here, out of the Robert's Rules. amendment is not an order which is not germane. It's usually related to some degree. This is an entirely different subject. I mean, this is looking at alternatives in a fishery management plan that need to be developed. The other one had to do with the service providing information about landings histories. I mean, those are totally two totally different concepts. So I think it's best to act on the first motion that's up there, and then entertain this motion as a separate entity. If we want to, try to at least generally follow the Roberts rules. I mean, this is one that just totally seems out of bounds.
I thank you for that. I agree with it. I would ask for a motion to table this motion for the moment, and then we will deal with the first one and come back to this one. Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Motion to table the motion on the board.
Seconded by Doug Grout. That's non-debatable. All those in favor so indicate. 15 in favor, opposed, 1 abstention, 0. Okay, the motion's been tabled. We're back on to the original motion. Further discussion on this motion? Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just in support of this, I was there at the committee when we discussed this and made a motion to this effect. I had talked to several fishermen about the changes in the monkfish plan, and there were quite a few that said, well, will I be better off with days at sea or with a catch history? So I think it was important to get this out ahead of time to the fishermen to start the debate so that at least they have something to look at and say, all right, and make an informed decision. And I think that will help guide the committee and the council going forward.
Further discussion? Mark?
I agree with this motion in principle, but I have a problem with specifying the qualification periods for the reasons that were mentioned by the industry in the comment period a little earlier. I believe that to include, we wouldn't want to include time periods in there until we have a little better idea of the range of alternatives. The other problem is probably more of a question for Pat, but this specific motion asks for area-specific landings, and you would be providing this information from the landings database, which doesn't necessarily have area-specific information in it, right, which would mean it would have to somehow be merged with VTRs, which would make it extraordinarily complicated to do. For that reason, it's going to be a lot of work, and I think if we had a better idea of what we want to ask for, I think the whole process would be better served. You know, if cash shares are just presented as an alternative for one area, that cuts down the work a little bit for NIMS. So I think if we have a better idea of where we're going, maybe we could delay this request for a short period of time.
Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the concept of this motion, but I think it's ahead of itself. The motion that's tabled, I think, will start the ball rolling, and then the committee can perfect this motion and make a more focused request in the future.
Doug. Just a question for Gene, since this is a committee motion. I'm sensing that there's a lot of support for this concept, but just the wrong timing. Is there, rather than us voting it down, is there a way that this motion can be withdrawn as a committee motion, or do we have to vote it up or down?
I didn't hear the last part. Is it possible for what?
For the motion to be withdrawn by the committee, or does it have to be voted up and down?
Well, I think if there's a consensus without objection, it could be withdrawn. But if somebody objects, I don't think so.
I'm going to Pat had her hand up, and then I will ask that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a couple of things on this motion. First off, it is, as Mark points out, an extremely resource-intensive, complicated task. Quite honestly, right now the agency couldn't take it on, absolutely could not take it on. We're in the process of starting implementation of the limited access program for the mackerel fishery. So all of the people that are involved in that would also be the same people that would be involved in trying to generate this information. So certainly in the next 6 months, this is not an option for us. Just as importantly, and maybe even more importantly, since we've last discussed it, I've grown even more. My discomfort has grown even more than the last time we talked about it. I honestly believe that this would just create chaos. Because you send out some information without any connection to what the council is considering and why they're considering it, is just going to generate a lot of questions and a lot of confusion. Because we do have confidentiality issues as well that I think are going to make this information for many people almost useless. This is not directly linked to a limited access program at this point in the process, and so any vessel that has changed hands, the current owner does not have access to the landings information from the previous owners, even though it might ultimately be part of their history, and would have to go through getting signed confidentiality agreements from all of the previous owners to get all of the history. And so you could be sending out partial information for people which they may not understand. I really think that you have to be much further along in the process before you start just sending out information to people. And you need to be able to explain better what that information is and isn't. So I really caution the council on trying to do this too early. We do, on a regular basis, respond to requests for information for permit history information from vessel owners, and so we are still doing that. It's done on a first-come, first-served basis. Anybody has the option of requesting that information, but as a just a sort of a blanket blast of information without a tie to what's being planned, I think, is really a mistake.
I will turn to the committee chair and ask, since it's a committee motion, whether you think that you're requesting that this be withdrawn at this time. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I shouldn't make that.
How do I state this?
Yes or no?
Well, okay. Yes, I agree that. Without consulting the committee, I mean, I agree that
they will have their chance momentarily when I ask without
objection. Yes, I agree
objection.
That it should be withdrawn. Yes.
Is there any objection? Okay. That motion is withdrawn. We have another motion that has been tabled. It needs to be brought back. Terry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to bring the table motion back on the board.
Is there a second to that? Tom Dempsey. Okay, we have that motion. This is it's a new motion. It's not a motion to substitute. Okay. We had some discussion on this. Actually, we had quite a bit of discussion on this. Further discussion, Dave Gatel.
In light of all the discussion we've had and what Pat just said, what I want to know is, is the committee going to be limited now to just straight catch history options, or are they entirely unfettered? As an example, I want an option that is based on permit category that history is irrelevant to. Everybody with an A permit gets X. Everybody with a B gets Y. Something like that that gets us out of this catch history box. And I want to know if I have to make a motion to charge a committee to specifically develop that kind of option, or will I get it through this?
My read of that is it doesn't restrict, it says develop a range of alternatives. And I think that it could be anything then. Frank?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Not to muck things up, but I think we have to vote on this to get it back on the table before we discuss whether we like it or not.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got ahead of myself. Okay. All those in favor of bringing this back on the table? Thank you, Frank. Fifteen in favor, opposed, one abstention, none. 15-1-0. The motion is back on the table. Dave.
Do I have to restate my previous comments since they were before it was untabled?
I would say that they're on the record.
Okay. Well, then again, I would request as part of this motion, if it passes, that the committee at least develop an option that's not tied to catch history in any way.
Mary Beth.
I would be opposed to that kind of amendment to this motion. I don't think we need to try to micromanage what the committee might come up with for alternatives. And certainly when they bring alternatives back to the council, if the council is not satisfied with the range of alternatives, it seems to me that that would be the appropriate time to add alternatives.
Anyone else? Call the question. All those in favor, so indicate. Fifteen in favor, opposed, one, abstention, zero. Okay, the motion carries. Mark, anything else?
There was just one other minor thing. In September, a motion was presented requesting that the council send a letter to NIMS asking whether the impact of monkfish tail weight conversion calculation issue can be mitigated through a technical amendment. And after some lengthy discussion, it was decided without objection that the motion would be remanded back to the Monkfish Committee for further discussion. The committee did not address that during the November 4th meeting, but that whole idea will be incorporated into the development of Amendment 6 and part of that discussion. So. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Has there been any, I want to say, offline discussion on resolving that issue with the service? Or?
No, there hasn't.
Anything else under Monkfish? Okay, we will take a break. We will come back at 10 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 at